Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Hi, Michelle Martin. Good of you to join me here on Your Money. Let's take a look at a quick picture, big view of the economy today. So a tame inflation report saw gains in U.S. equity. It helped recovery in value stocks as well. We saw Treasury yields dipping and the dollar weakening. The S&P 500 rose for a second day, led by financial firms and producers of raw materials, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed above 32,000 for the first time. Let's try to make sense of what's happening big picture-wise with Arun Pai, one of our favorite commentators, Chief Strategy Officer at Flow. Good morning, Arun.
Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for joining us. So we saw a tamer than expected core CPI figures. The numbers coming in less than estimates had expected, and that's eased some inflation alarms somewhat. Investors, though, seem to be split on inflation outlook, right? Some say, well, look, there's still that $1.9 trillion stimulus bill that's going to lead to liquidity still hunting for a home. And then there's that infrastructure spending that we're expecting the U.S. to pass, and an infrastructure bill as well. So first up, what do you think is happening right now? Do you think a big part of the bond yield moves have played out? Are you expecting, what is your inflation outlook?
To be honest, the inflation numbers for the month of Feb, as you were mentioning, came up to be quite a bit lower than expected. Energy prices have obviously been shooting higher from the beginning of the year. Consumer inflation was up only 0.4% in the month of Feb. Core inflation, as you also rightfully mentioned, which excludes food and energy, was up a very small 0.1% for the month,
yep,
which gave a lot of, a peaceful sleep, I guess, to bond investors because they could see like yields coming back down. I personally feel, I am very, very bullish on the vaccine rollout being a lot quicker than what people are anticipating, leading to the economy reopening in a slightly quicker fashion. Mm. Now, I'm not saying it's going to get overheated or anything like that just yet, but in terms of just the whole pent-up frustration that's going through consumers and people right now in terms of wanting to travel, in terms of wanting to go out and actually experience and enjoy life, while at the same time, we can see that in Singapore also, right? Like my mother just got a notification from MOH to come over and get the vaccine done. Just over 60 years old. So it's gone from like over 70, which is my dad, to like 60s. And we can just envision over the next couple of months, which is right before the peak summer boom travel time, especially in Europe and the U.S., one can hope that the rollout of vaccinations will happen. At the same time, the Democrats being extremely, supportive to the people who might not be as well off in the economy, huge stimulus package. $1.9 trillion has been pushed out right now, voting along complete party lines, but it makes no difference, right? Because the House and the Senate are both ruled over by the Democrats in this case. So in that regard, I think there's this huge amount of additional capital being pushed into the economy. With the vaccinations being rolled out, it really leads to wonder, when inflation will start creeping back in. And sure, we might not see it in Feb or maybe over the next couple of months, but if I had to gaze into my crystal ball and I have to look at the remainder of the year and maybe 2022, it just seems like there will be a very, maybe I would hope, just a healthy dose of inflation, which leads at least me to shying away from bonds completely. I think at the current interest rates that bonds are providing, and kind of similar along what Warren Buffett was writing in a shareholder letter also, just taking into account the risk-reward situation right now, it just doesn't make sense to be in bonds. And equity seems to be the only game in town because cash, you're obviously earning 0% per annum.
Okay, so if inflation could accelerate, given pandemic stimulus, a vaccination campaign that's rolling out quite successfully across many continents, and income growth and businesses set to reopen, what does this mean for asset classes which are poised to benefit? I mean, we're seeing some high-quality stocks sell at historic discounts. I'm talking about the tech stocks, like the, you know, your FANG stocks, your Amazon, your Facebooks, even NVIDIA down some 24.6%. So are you seeing certain asset classes, the value stocks, present opportunities? And also, do you think there are some high-quality stocks trading at discounts?
Right. So my perspective is, you know, tech has corrected 15-20%, give or take, in the last about a month, ish month and a half odd. But my personal take is that they're still quite expensive, right? Because let's not, just because they're down by 20% doesn't make a stock attractive. If you just go back like about a year or a year and a half, these stocks are still like up 4 times, 3 times, 5 times from you know, the year 2019, so maybe early 2020, the price level at that point of time. So I think it's a bit of a fallacy for at least value investors or people who are looking at investing into a stock as if it's investing in a business, which is long-term investing. Just because something is corrected by 20% doesn't make it suddenly a value buy. So what I'm personally looking at is giving it some more time, letting the realized earnings of these technology companies even come remotely close to the extremely lofty valuations that most of these are still trading on. With exceptions, I would say, of Google and Apple. I would say in the large tech sphere, I think excluding those two, the rest of them, especially the slightly smaller cap ones, and by slightly smaller, I still mean like a $100 billion market cap, like, say, Zoom or something. I would love to see a couple more quarters of earnings matching at least somewhat closer to the realize of what is expected. And then potentially the valuations of these stocks might be a little bit more in line. And I at least, personally, I would start looking into investing into the technology sector a little bit more. That being said, though, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, bonds, personally staying away from cash, you know, obviously keeping about 10% of my portfolio in cash. But the rest, I'm looking at more infrastructure stocks, financial stocks, oil and gas stocks. These are ones that I've been, you know, scaling up quite significantly from about like middle to end of last year. Right now, given the recent more price run-up, I still think there's some buckets of value over there. But let's just say I'm not... I'm already quite invested in those sectors already, so I'm quite happy to stay put and see how, you know, the price action is realized.
Okay, so even though these are high-quality stocks selling at historic discounts, some of the names I mentioned, you know, the Amazon, the Facebooks, the NVIDIA, Adobe, Merck, you say look at value, look at the results over the next couple of quarters, with the exception of Apple and, was it Amazon?
Google.
Google. Okay, got it.
Just looking at, like, valuation, not... I'm not looking at if Google or Amazon or Facebook or any of these stocks have like dropped by 20%. That doesn't make a difference, because when you're buying into a stock today, you're hoping for the realized earnings of this, or the free cash flow, the owner's earnings of this company in the future. Right. So the share price would have gone up 50%, or it could have gone down 50%. It shouldn't make a difference as to why you're buying it right now.
All right, got it, got it. The S&P 500 rose 0.6% last night, led by gains in energy and financial stocks, but we saw tech companies fall. So broadly speaking, Arun, why is tech lagging behind other equities?
It's really strange, right? I mean, if you look at it over the last like 4 or 5 days, you're seeing a crazy yo-yo. One day Tesla's up 20% and ARK fund manager comes out and saying like, you know, life is great. I've been buying Tesla the last week. The next day tech crashes and then value stocks are coming, quote unquote, value stocks are coming into play. I think it's just the nature of a lot of money has been made in tech stocks over the past a year, 2 years, maybe even slightly longer, in many of these marquee names that you highlighted. So fund managers are just taking a step back, reevaluating the situation, and not necessarily, you know, getting out of tech completely, but just trimming their positions to some extent to try and, you know, balance out their risk profile a little bit and get into another sector which is poised for a recovery after very slumped stock prices over the past 5 or 10 years. You know, bank financials have not been the greatest sector to be invested in, neither is infrastructure. And it just seems like, you know, maybe this year and the next year, we'll see these sectors coming out a little bit better and on top as compared to tech names, given the relative valuation, attractive levels, at least I personally believe, that these real economy stocks have as compared to tech.
All right. Are you at all interested in that online gaming platform Roblox? Because ARK Investment has bought Roblox on its first day of trading. One of the buyers of Roblox shares, ARK Next Generation Internet ETF, adding 500,000 shares of the stock, accounting for 0.5% of the fund's portfolio. I just want to get on Roblox. Sounds so much fun. Gaming and, you know, create your own time wasters for other people.
You know, I was about to say that. I do not know much about the share price because it just recently listed. Great story, but I would love to be in the platform too and check it out.
Okay, we'll both do that. All right, next up, the Jardine Group of Companies says the company is going to simplify its corporate structure in what is a $5.5 billion deal. Now, as part of the plan, Jardine Matheson will buy 15% of Jardine Strategic Holdings that it does not already own. Investors cheering this news. Jardine Strategic jumped nearly 20% on the back of that news. Jardine Matheson rose more than 15%. Broadly speaking, Arun, what do you think of this deal that is quite significant? Some analysts saying the offer price for Jardine Strategic is 20 to 30% below its net asset value. What are your thoughts?
You know, first and foremost, I would just like to tell all your listeners, if they're interested in be it Jardine Matheson or any of the underlying companies within that conglomerate, to please read Traders of the Far East. I think it's by Robert Blake. It's a pretty long read. It's about like a 900, give or take, odd pages. But it gives you a really fascinating insight into how a company that was founded in early 1800s has managed to survive the ups and downs of economic cycles, geopolitical issues, massive wars, World War One, World War Two, and you know the larger ones prior to that also. It's a truly fantastic read. Now, having read that book myself and knowing fully well that it was the largest market capitalization stock on the SGX, it was the first annual report I read when I was told to move to Singapore from New York back in 2007. And honestly, I did not understand the annual report. Now, like from the 20,000 feet in the air concept, you know, it's invested into a whole bunch of really fantastic brand name businesses. Cycle and Carriage, you know, the car dealership, Mandarin Oriental, a beautiful five-star hotel, Dairy Farm, which owns Cold Storage and Guardian. So pretty much, you know, through most, it has multiple touch points into pretty much most Singaporeans living over here. But the problem is, or the problem was at least for me to invest into the stock, was the extremely convoluted conglomerate structure, where you had all sorts of cross holdings in dual holding companies, subsidiaries where there was either a minority or majority stake, consolidation at the holdco level vis-a-vis a minority interest accounting. It just became extremely, extremely confusing for me to try and understand how to value this business. And I think that's exactly the problem that they've been in for the past like 20 years, because I believe like, you know, late 1980s was when they decided to, you know, some really smart investment banker would have come along and said, oh, if you want to realize value, start spinning off certain divisions of yours. And then they went about spinning off, you know, Jardine Strategic and a couple of others. And now another investment bank has probably gone up to them and said, oh, if you truly want to realize value, because your entire conglomerate structure is trading at a fraction to your book value, then it makes sense to acquire the stock back at relatively cheap and, you know, consolidate everything at the holdco level. So from that perspective, as a long-term shareholder, I'm not completely sure whether the holdco is doing things to the benefit or to the advantage of the minority shareholders. So in this specific case, these guys, the holdco already owned 85% of the subsidiary. And when they gave out a price, sure, it was like, I think, 30-35%, give or take, higher than what the share price was trading at on a volume-weighted basis for the past couple of months. But we're also in the middle of a pandemic. This is not like a hot tech stock that they were acquiring at a crazy multiple. It was, you know, a true blood infrastructure or real economy-related stock. So have minority shareholders who've been potentially been holding on to this over the past 10 years been a bit shortchanged? I would think so. Like, is the real value a little bit higher? Give or take. I mean, these guys, United First Partners, came out saying, you know, it's undervalued by 20%. Is that true? You know, based on balance sheet and based on analysis, it seems like it, yes. But that being said, is the holdco itself trading at like a 0.8 price to book value? That is also the case. So, you know, I can kind of see like both sides of what people are trying to achieve. But, you know, it's just the nature of being in the capital markets where you're sometimes not given the best deal of a very clean valuation. But yeah, it just is what it is, sadly, in some cases.
First up, thank you for an enthralling addition to all our libraries. I'm very excited to read Jardine Matheson, Traders of the Far East by Robert Blake. And I hope listeners pick that up as well to understand the historical origins of this great company, really. But the question that I want to ask, given where we are right now, is there any chance that you see this deal does not go through?
I don't think so. I think, you know, considering Jardine Matheson already owns 85% of the stock, I think there will have to be, and it's not like this was at a ridiculously low valuation either. Mm. That 20% discrepancy or, you know, lower than quote-unquote fair value that United First Partners has come up with, mm-hmm. very valid, but at the same time, you know, the holdco can raise its hand saying, look, this is what we are valued at as price to book ourselves. And if that's the case, then who are you to tell me what the valuation should be? This is what the valuation that the market is deciding right now. So we are taking advantage of this and acquiring the company and streamlining the entire structure. So from that regard, I don't think that there is a legal aspect here where minority shareholders can come out and say that they are oppressed. And hence, I think SGX will kind of let this go through, SGX and the regulators and everyone else involved, obviously. I think they will let this go through. From the perspective of, is this going to make the holdco a more attractive value, a more attractive stock to deploy capital into? I think, sadly, I'll still have to wait and see as to whether they truly realize some of those cost synergies that they were highlighting, truly simplifying the org structure, the cap table, to at least enable me to understand the balance sheet and the company a little bit better. So I'm looking forward to the next year's annual report, and I'll make a decision after that. But in terms of headline numbers, it does seem to be attractively priced.
The delisting of Jardine Strategic is going to impact the Straits Times Index. It opens up a vacancy in the SDI. The most likely candidate to replace Jardine Strategic is Frasers Logistics and Commercial Trust. Do you think this shakeup will have further impact on the SDI and the Singapore market more generally?
This specific incident, I don't think it will, to be honest. Mm. It's not like if the new entrant was going to be, say, a grab going IPO via a SPAC, I think that would have really shook things up in the equity markets of Singapore, which tends to be, you know, not paid as much attention to as, say, Hong Kong or London or New York. So I think, you know, given the potential prospects that can be included into the SDI, I think it's pretty much business as usual. What I would be really interested in seeing, and you know, I was reading a couple of days ago where there's this whole white paper out and SGX is exploring getting SPACs involved over here also. I think if that is done correctly, and it's just this doesn't become an avenue where pretty much anyone can, you know, create an SPAC and just take any company public, but stringent rules and regulations are put in place to ensure that the right private companies can be taken public through this process, I think that will generate a lot of attention into the Singapore equity markets, which it desperately needs, because we already know that the amount of capital in Singapore is ginormous. Mm-hmm. All these really famous family offices have been getting set up over here, yeah. Be it the Google guys, be it, across the board, right? So there's no dearth of capital here. The country as a whole, and SGX very specifically, needs to provide them an avenue to deploy capital and keep the capital within this region. That would be fantastic. So that's what I'm looking forward to over the course of the rest of the year.
All right, one final question for you, Arun. I love it when you give us a reading list at the end of the show. Have you read Noble House, which was inspired by Jardine Matheson Holdings?
I have actually not.
All right. You know what? So you give me a 900-page novel, I give you a 1,000-page novel to read.
On my to-do list, I read Noble House, then I read the annual report, and then I make a decision whether the stock is a good stock to buy or not.
Sounds like a plan. Have a wonderful weekend, Arun. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, as always, Michelle.
He's Arun Pai, Chief Strategy Officer at Flow, joining us this morning in Money and Me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.